This season, Toyota Racing is looking for jugglers.
Aha!
Not the ones who toss balls or rings. Fans that can juggle the rigors of a 10-month-long season across many different racing circuits.
Well, what if I added knives?
What if you added GR Cup, Formula Drift, and off-road racing? If you can juggle it all, then we want you. Be part of the action at toyota.com/racing. Toyota, let's go places. Formula Drift is a registered trademark of Formula Drifts Holdings, LLC.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Underage sale prohibited. Introducing Zone Nicotine Pouches, the perfect balance of unparalleled comfort, longer-lasting flavor, and nicotine that satisfies. Whether you're zoning in during the race or zoning out after a tough day at work, Zone gets you there faster and keeps you there longer. Available in 7 flavors and in 6 and 9 milligram strengths. Find Zone at zonepouches.com and retailers near you. Own your Zone. With Zone Nicotine Pouches.
The following is a production of the Motor Racing Network, the voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network presents NASCAR Live.
White flag is in the air here at the Phoenix Raceway. Christopher Bell, one more trip around.
Here he comes through the dog leg, up to the banking in the 8th and 9th degree banking in turns 1 and 2. Christopher Bell could almost cruise at home, rolling out of the throttle ever so easily off of turn 2. Now back on the gas, down the back straightaway.
Dominant afternoon for Joe Gibbs Racing Toyotas. A dominant final stage for Christopher Bell. He leads into turn 3 for the final time.
Up off of turn number 4, checkered flag will go in the air. Christopher Bell will win the Shriners Children's 500 at Phoenix Raceway.
Man, I could kind of drive it wherever I wanted. That thing was amazing, and I know that those race cars don't come very often, so it feels really, really nice to capitalize on that whenever you got a race car that good. And we knew after Friday that we had a pretty good piece, so glad that we were able to deliver.
NASCAR Live is brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. From the MRN studios in Concord, North Carolina, here is your host, Mike Bagley.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of NASCAR Live here on the Motor Racing Network. Mike Bagley and the entire MRN crew here with you, coming off of a thrilling racing weekend at Phoenix and getting ready to head to Thunder Valley and Bristol Motor Speedway. Coming up on today's show, we'll relive all the action from Sunday's Shriners Children's 500 with the NASCAR Live backtracks. We'll also look at the history of NASCAR racing on St. Patrick's Day. That's coming up on Sunday. NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series driver Tyler Ankrum will join us. He leads the points right now as the trucks get set to head back into action on Saturday at Bristol. We'll also preview the return of racing on the concrete to the Bristol Spring Racing Weekend, plus a clip from the latest episode of NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History. But first, Kyle Ricci is here with a check of the latest headlines in NASCAR. Kyle?
Mike, Christopher Bell's victory at Phoenix Raceway in Sunday's NASCAR Cup Series race set a new record. The 5.5-second margin of victory was the largest in the next-gen era. The previous high was also set by Bell at New Hampshire in 2022. A couple up-and-coming drivers will be making their NASCAR debuts in the upcoming weeks. Tricon Garage announced that Cars Tour late model stock car standout Brendan Butterbean Queen will make his NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series debut at North Wilkesboro Speedway behind the wheel of the number one Toyota Tundra TRD Pro. And 2024 Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona winner Connor Zilich will make his NASCAR Xfinity Series debut following his 18th birthday at Watkins Glen for Junior Motorsports. Additionally, he'll pilot the number 88 at Kansas, Homestead, and Phoenix in the fall. Mike.
Coming up, we'll relive all of the thrills from Sunday's NASCAR Cup Series racing action at Phoenix.
Hey everyone, it's Kyle Busch. At Cheddar's, you get a variety of American classics in a place that feels like home. They have comfort food like hand-breaded chicken tenders, homemade chicken pot pie with nearly a half a pound of roasted chicken under that golden flaky crust, slow-smoked baby back ribs so big they're falling off the plate, all for unbeatable prices. And the best part? A free honey butter croissant for every guest. Now that's how they do it. Cheddar's. Get a lot for not a lot.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Christopher Bell was victorious in the desert Sunday afternoon. He outlasted the field in the Shriners Children's 500. Let's hear all the action from Sunday's race with another edition of a NASCAR Live Backtracks.
Third time by, they are locked up side by side.
Trouble off of turn two. One car is in a spin, lots of white smoke, and now he's collected. It looks like it is the machine of Derek Krause. He got sideways and collected one. Austin Dillon, T-Bone, Derek Krause, and that happened at the exit of turn two. Reddick went all the way through the bottom of the gauntlet, trying to get around Ty Gibbs. It didn't work this time, but as he exits off turn two, he'll clear Tyler Reddick. You're clear, Ty Gibbs. Your new leader is Tyler Reddick.
Reddick is able to break away by a half car length or so on Ty Gibbs. Denny Hamlin still very much a part of this battle right there in third.
New leader here at the Phoenix Raceway with two laps remaining in the stage. It is Tyler Reddick as he makes his way back to turn one.
Final lap of stage number one. It's Tyler Reddick by six car lengths. Now Ty Gibbs in jeopardy of losing second. Ty Gibbs, his mirror is filled with Denny Hamlin. That gap only a car length and a half. A wide identical line through turns one and two. Hamlin looks briefly to the outside of Ty Gibbs.
That battle for second now a full six or seven car lengths behind Tyler Reddick, who once he got out front has been able to drive away at the point.
What a race, what a show here in stage number one, and it's about to come to an end. Green and white checkered flag is in the air, and Tyler Reddick has scored his first stage win of 2024.
Sure adjustment, William Byron, the treaded loose in and tight off the battle off from pit road. Denny Hamlin wins it. Out goes Tyler Reddick in the second. Looks like William Byron goes out third. Chase Elliott fourth on the cars here on this end of pit road. Denny Hamlin just a little bit loose is what he was dealing with. Nothing major on that car. Tyler Reddick, your race leader, tight center, loose off, which is what we hear frequently at racetracks like here at Phoenix Pit Stops. Tyler Reddick has brought his car in. He is down and away. Four-tire Sunoco Racing Field. Daniel Suarez comes out. Denny Hamlin has to lock on the brakes. He just about gets together with Daniel Suarez. Now, Hamlin dives around the backside of Suarez's car. Going to be four tires, no adjustment. Denny Hamlin, good with his race car in that very first pit stop. He is down and away.
With five laps remaining in the stage, again, valuable stage points on the line. Top two, nose to tail.
Again, in front of the top two is Ryan Preece. He's trying to stay on the lead lap. He goes to the eighth and trying to do so. Bell dive bombs to the bottom of turns one and two. Can he clear Reddick? He does. He has the lead momentarily.
There's Reddick with the crossover move up the back straightaway off of turn two. Now we'll look back to the inside of Bell, who will throw the block and maintain the lead for now.
As they come up off turn number four, four laps to go in the stage. Ryan Preece right in front of the battle for the race lead, trying to stay on the lead lap.
One to go in the stage, and Christopher Bell looking to pick up his first stage win of 2024. He's got a comfortable advantage at the moment.
And Tyler Reddick in second spot made a stab at Ryan Preece through the dogleg. Preece said nothing doing, and now Bell just pulls away. Now it's up to 10 car lengths for Christopher Bell.
Bell all by himself right now, up the back straightaway. No pressure from behind, leads into turn number three.
Here he comes, heavy traffic right in front of him, but he will not mess with that. He'll roll out of the throttle, see the green and white checkered flag, and Christopher Bell will win stage number two of the Shriners Children's 500. Double down the back straightaway, one car spinning, it is Kyle Busch, and a bad day has just got worse for Kyle Busch. He slides off of turn two, didn't look like he made contact with anything, but he comes to a rest right in the middle of the backstretch.
Caution flag number five, and it comes out on lap 196. Dan was exactly right. A bad weekend has just gotten worse. Man, they will probably be happy to load that car onto the transporter and head out of here. It has been miserable for Kyle Busch.
Great one. It is Brad Keselowski low, Chase Elliott high, and right in the middle is Christopher Bell. We have trouble. One car spins. That's another machine. It is the car of Joey Logano. He just lost it on that lower line. Don't know if he had help. Slammed the wall and collected Josh Berry, Corey LaJoy, and it looks like Derek Krause also caught a piece of this action.
I believe Zane Smith involved also, but you're right. Derek Krause, Joey Logano, LaJoy, caution flag out. Well, that was big. It's been a long day for Joey Logano as well, Dan Hubbard. A moment ago, it was Kyle Busch. who's had a long day, and now it's Joey Logano.
I got to believe that Joey had some help on that particular one. I did not see the contact, but he went so fast up the banking backwards. That just doesn't happen if you just lost it. He could have applied some kind of brake. So I think he was at full speed. The car got twisted, hit the wall with the rear end, collected another machine, and Joey is okay. They're already hooking up a tow truck for the Joey Logano car.
We got a great battle for the race lead in turn one.
Fast and furious up the front. Denny Hamlin gets loose. He makes contact with Kyle Reddick. He's trying to counter steer, can't do it. And he slides in front of a hard charging field. Somehow, some way, everybody avoids Denny Hamlin. He lost the handle right in the center of the corner, bounced off Tyler Reddick, slid all the way almost to pit entrance, and somehow the entire field missed Denny Hamlin.
How does that happen? He was running at the front of the field, lost the back end, slid sideways for a number of yards. Christopher Bell has just taken over Dan Hubbard, position number two.
It was a nice nifty move on the last lap to the inside of turn two. Christopher Bell to the inside of Ty Gibbs. No contact made at all. I love what Christopher Bell is doing right now. He is not forcing the issue. These are very, very well-controlled laps, and yet the race is coming to Christopher Bell. When you don't have to push your car and you're still passing people, that's a good day, and that's what Christopher Bell is experiencing right now.
The race leader is Martin Truex Jr., and here he comes off the racetrack, headed for pit road. Race leader Truex hits 45 miles per hour. Christopher Bell flashes by on the backstretch and takes the lead. Kim Coon, Truex is in.
And the last time he hit was lap 190, so he'll take not only fuel but tires under this green flag stop as well. In fact, four fresh tires, Sunoco fuel. So, man, not what this team was hoping for. They gave up the lead to make that crucial stop that they needed to make it to the end of the race.
New race leader, 40 laps to go, Phoenix Raceway. It is indeed Christopher Bell. He is out front yet again, and now all he's going to try to do is hit his marks and drive away with now just 39 laps remaining. White flag is in the air here at the Phoenix Raceway. Christopher Bell, one more trip around.
Here he comes through the dog leg, up to the banking, in the 8 to 9 degree banking in turns 1 and 2. Christopher Bell could almost cruise at home, rolling out of the throttle ever so easily off of turn 2. Now back on the gas, down the back straightaway.
Dominant afternoon for Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota's. A dominant final stage for Christopher Bell. He leads into turn 3 for the final time.
Up off of turn number 4, checkered flag will go in the air. Christopher Bell will win the Shriners Children's 500 at Phoenix Raceway.
Quite the day for Christopher Bell. Quite the day for Toyota coming up. We'll go through the history of NASCAR racing on St. Patrick's Day.
Crowd spinning your hand up to stopping, yeah. Not a chair, creaky stand, or even engine repair. Crowd spinning your hand, nothing you can't do. Like a lawn, Mickey John, or that kitchen hat on. Crowd spinning your hand up to stopping, yeah.
From outdoor care to home and auto repair, do it with Craftsman. Find the tools, equipment, and storage you need at your local Lowe's, Ace Hardware, or Craftsman.com.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. This Sunday afternoon at Bristol, the NASCAR Cup Series will race on St. Patrick's Day. Now, throughout NASCAR's history, this has been a common occurrence. Let's take some time now to go through the history of NASCAR racing on St. Patty's Day. Our Kurt Becker joins us to take us through.
When race fans think of NASCAR and holidays, they perhaps remember the Firecracker 400s in Daytona on Independence Day, the Labor Day Classics at Darlington, or even the recent trend of racing under the lights on Easter Sunday. But the sport has a substantial history on another holiday of sorts, even if it's not an official federal holiday, for the sport will once again go racing this Sunday on St. Patrick's Day. NASCAR's history on St. Paddy's Day goes back nearly 70 years to 1957. That marked the first time the Cup Series raced on March 17th, and the event took place at Wilson Speedway, a half-mile dirt track in Wilson, North Carolina. On that day, Ralph Moody lapped the entire field twice, beating a lineup that included future NASCAR Hall of Famers Buck Baker, Lee Petty, and Fireball Roberts. The sport again raced on the 17th of March, 5 years later in 1962. Once again on a half-mile dirt track, but this time at Savannah Speedway in Georgia. Jack Smith won the St. Patrick's Day 200 in what was a battle of attrition, as only 8 cars of 16 that started the race were running when the checkered flag flew. NASCAR raced on St. Paddy's Day twice more in the 1960s. In 1963, some 55,000 fans watched Fred Lorenzen win at what was known at the time as Atlanta International Raceway. And then in 1968, the Cup Series went to Bristol, Tennessee, just like it will this Sunday. On that occasion, David Pearson topped Richard Petty in a March 17th race where they were the only two drivers to finish on the lead lap. The first time a Motor Racing Network broadcast took place on St. Patrick's Day was in 1985. On that afternoon, a fan favorite won for the 6th time in his career, but for the first time at his home track.
Harold Kinder displays the white flag to Bill Elliott as he zips back into turn one.
Bill Elliott working his way into the corner. Meanwhile, that battle further back for 6th spots, still a hot one, but it's the man at the point coming past us for the final time. Bill Elliott with race traffic not a factor. He's on the backstretch.
The red, white, and gold cores for Thunderbird streaks down the back straightaway for the final time today, moving into turn number 3. Still that very clean, low line. Bill Elliott on his way, cruising to victory. Meanwhile, behind him, Labonte, Bouchard, and Parsons are lined up nose to tail. Bumper to bumper heading in turn 3.
Fans are on their feet as Bill Elliott comes across turn number 4 and heads down to the line, checkered flag, and he'll win the Coca-Cola 500. Jeff Bodine will finish in the number 2 position.
That was part of a banner beginning to the 1985 season for Bill Elliott. He kicked things off by winning the Daytona 500, and then, a few weeks later, Awesome Bill from Dawsonville picked up a victory that held its own special meaning for him when he won the Coca-Cola 500 at Atlanta, just 85 miles from his hometown. The Cup Series did not race on St. Patrick's Day during the 1990s, but in that decade, both the Xfinity and Truck Series held events on March 17th. Most notable was a doubleheader in 1996. That day featured a future Hall of Famer winning a caution-filled race at the Nashville Fairgrounds layout and a thrilling finish in the Truck Series season opener at Homestead Miami Speedway.
One lap to go in the Opryland 320. Bobby Labonte and David Green as Larry Pearson spins in turn 4. We follow the race leader off 2.
Here comes the brown, white, and yellow Chevrolet of race leader Bobby Labonte. The brown and yellow Chevrolet of David Green rides along in the 2nd spot.
The track is clear for Bobby Labonte. Can he hold off David Green? David down to the inside, makes his last move, can't do it. Bobby Labonte wins at Nashville.
Coming down for the white flag, just a couple of truck lengths between the front two. Jack Sprague also making that a three-way battle. They close in on traffic.
Dave Resendez flying the Ford banner on the final lap, looking at traffic ahead, choosing up lanes, deciding which way to go. Traffic goes low. Resendez goes high. Off turn 2, almost into the wall. Standing on that gas down the back chute.
Resendez hangs on with authority as they now come down the backstretch. Resendez zigzagging. Hornaday to the inside. Hornaday to the outside. They touch. Resendez now will lose the lead. Hornaday drifts wide in the corner. Resendez is sideways. It's 3 wide. Hornaday's in the wall. Resendez hangs on. He will get the lead.
Some spectacular moves on the final lap here coming off turn 4. Dave Resendez has the lead. Jack Sprague's in a tie one last time. Sprague spins down low. They make contact. Resendez goes sideways across the line. Jack Sprague spins across the start-finish line. But Dave Resendez, what a spectacular last lap. He's going to win the Florida Dodge Dealers 400.
In total, the NASCAR Xfinity Series has raced on St. Patrick's Day 6 times, while the Truck Series has done so on 3 occasions. Todd Bodine has won on the holiday in both series, making him the only NASCAR driver to win on St. Patrick's Day twice. Back we go to the Cup Series, which made its return to the St. Paddy's lineup in 2002.
I think he's back to 2.
Harlan has all the room in the world, does not have to pass another car this afternoon. The Coors Light Dodge off turn 2 to the back straightaway for the final time.
Sterling Marlin thunders past the back stretch, grandstands. The fans giving him a wave now as he works off the end of the back straightaway. Nary a scratch on his Dodge. He'll swing wide in turns 3 and 4. Sterling Marlin's looking for the checker flag.
Sterling Marlin proving he is for real as a championship contender this year as he nails down his 2nd win of the season here at Darlington, winning the Carolina Dodge Dealers 400 after starting dead last.
That victory for Sterling Marlin at the Darlington Raceway was his 2nd in the first 5 races of 2002. That early season success established Marlin as a threat to win the championship for the first time in his career, even leading the point standings for a stretch of 25 weeks. But those hopes were dashed when he was injured at Kansas in September and was forced to the sidelines for the final seven races. As for St. Patrick's Day celebrations, they once again returned to Bristol Motor Speedway in 2013. Casey Kane found the four-leaf clover that day, picking up his only Bristol win by besting brothers Kurt and Kyle Busch, as well as Brad Keselowski. And the most recent time that the Cup Series raced on St. Patrick's Day was 5 years ago. On that afternoon in 2019, one of the Busch brothers, who came up just short in 2013, got the win and painted Fontana, California green.
One to go for Kyle Busch, the Las Vegas, Nevada native.
Brings that green and white Interstate Batteries Toyota into turn number one for the final time, using the outside of the racetrack, closing in on Matt Tipp. It is Kyle Busch at the front of the field and off of turn number two for the final time here at Auto Club Speedway.
Up the back straightaway he comes. Kyle Busch is a half a lap away from yet another career milestone. What a comeback after a speeding penalty on pit road. He has made his way back. Kyle Busch off of turn four.
A milestone win on a track where he scored his very first Cup victory. Here comes Kyle Busch off turn number four, looking for the checkered flag, and he'll get it. And Kyle Busch has won here at the Auto Club Speedway, winning the Auto Club 400 and national win number 200 for the Las Vegas native.
This Sunday will mark the 10th time the NASCAR Cup Series has raced on St. Patrick's Day, and with the race taking place at Bristol, where Kyle Busch has won 8 times on the concrete, it might not be a stretch to think Kyle could join Todd Bodine as the only other driver to win twice on March 17th.
Thank you, Kurt. Coming up, we'll have the latest clip from our latest episode of NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History.
Kyle Larson brings his Chevy and four tires, Sunoco Racing Fuel.
From fueling NASCAR champions on the track for over 20 years to innovating 94 octane, the highest octane on the market, performance is what Sunoco does. All Sunoco fuel at the pump meets the same top-tier standards as the fuel used in NASCAR.
Ryan's not here for Ryan Blaney. Four tires with Sunoco fuel.
From the track to your tank, you can trust Sunoco to help your vehicle perform at its peak.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Monday, Motor Racing Network dropped the fourth installment of our new podcast series called NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History. This podcast relives that season as it was filled with drama, heartbreak, and tragedy. This week's episode takes you through Jimmy Johnson's victorious day at Pocono, Ryan Newman winning in the Irish Hills of Michigan, and Jeff Gordon's string of poles and back-to-back wins. Jeff Gordon took no time washing away the disappointment from Michigan as he paced the way for 92 of the 110 laps run at Sonoma the following week. He picked up his third victory of the season and the second in his home state of California. Gordon would then be back on the pole for a third straight week as NASCAR celebrated Independence Day weekend at the World Center of Racing at Daytona International Speedway. Rain delayed the start of the race as NASCAR proceeded to start the Pepsi 400 under the caution flag until going green on lap 10.
Jeff Gordon and Michael Waltrip at the front of the field and 150,000 of their closest friends. The main grandstand packed, and Barney, nobody's sitting down anticipating the green flag.
Been waiting for this for a long time this evening, and finally it's about to happen. We're going green flag racing, although we have run 8 laps under the caution. The pace car gets ready to make the hard left-hand turn onto the pit lane. Up front, couple of Chevrolets, row 2, couple of Fords, couple of Chevys on row number 3. The Pepsi 400 about to get underway. Here's Barney Hall.
Field comes down the line. Green flag goes in the air a couple of hours late, and Jeff Gordon, Michael Waltrip rush off to turn number 1.
In a race that was green for the final 80 laps, Gordon made it back to back to back Nextel Cup Series these victories as he held off his Hendrick teammate in Jimmy Johnson and Dale Earnhardt Jr.
One lap to go. They're out of turn four, heading down to the start-finish line. White flag will be waving this time. It is Jeff Gordon, Jimmy Johnson, Earnhardt Jr., Kurt Busch, and Tony Stewart. But who's going to go to victory lane? They go to turn one.
Jeff Gordon with the lead. Goes to the outside, puts a slower car in the rearview mirror. Dale Earnhardt Jr. all over the back bumper of the second-place car of Jimmy Johnson. But Johnson holds him off. Here's Jeff Gordon off turn two for the final time.
So far, so good for Jeff Gordon. He comes to the super stretch with his teammate right in his rearview mirror. Dale Earnhardt Jr., not a factor. Here's Johnson looking high and looking low, looking for the lead, but Jeff Gordon leads back to turn three.
Everybody on their feet here at Daytona. Jeff Gordon leading Jimmy Johnson. Dale Earnhardt Jr. going third, going to try to make one last run, but it's Jeff Gordon off turn four.
Jeff Gordon started on the Bud pole tonight like he did last week at Infineon Raceway, and at the finish, he'll be up front like he did last week. Jeff Gordon wins the Pepsi 400.
Throughout Jeff Gordon's Hall of Fame career, he established the propensity to conserve his equipment during the grind of each Cup Series race. On that evening in Daytona, Gordon established that talent again. He spoke about how he was able to earn that reputation.
I think as a driver, right, your goal and your skill set is how do you adapt to the conditions? How do you adapt to the length of the race? You know, how do you help the team set up the car based on what you're feeling? And so whatever race car I was in, that's what I felt like your job was, you know, to make sure that you read it and you excelled at it and you gave great feedback. It took me a little while that season to understand the balance of the car, how to conserve things, what, you know, kind of things you needed to do to have the car ready to run that long of a race or that long of stints for, you know, on fuel. Or a track like Rockingham, where the tires go away super fast, and how to conserve them. So, you know, to me, every track was different. Some tracks you didn't have to conserve. Sometimes you did. Back in the earlier 90s, you know, mid-90s when I came in, you kind of had to conserve your stuff. I mean, if you go back, right, there were times where they dropped the green. You didn't run as hard as you felt like you needed. You didn't even run as hard as you needed to the first half of the race. You would just say, okay, I'm in position here. I'm top five. I feel like I'm not abusing anything. I'm good. I'm content. And then second half of the race, boom, let's go. And that changed. That evolved a lot over the year. I mean, these days, these guys, they're like qualifying laps from lap one to the final, you know, lap. So I think you race the conditions that you're faced with. And I felt like I got, you know, good at. Of course, I had great cars and great setups, and you know, so I'll certainly first start with that. But I do think that you know, I got really good at conserving things just because that's what the goal was, or that's what it took.
You can catch the full episode of NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Coming up, Tyler Ankrum joins us.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming! And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
So glad you're spending your Tuesday evening with us here on the Motor Racing Network. We welcome you back in to NASCAR Live. Following a week off, the Tough Trucks of NASCAR will be back in action at Bristol Motor Speedway this Saturday. One truck driver in particular who has had success throughout the first three races of the year is Tyler Ankrum. Tyler currently is the points leader heading into Bristol this weekend. And that's following a top five finish and a pair of top 10 finishes. He sat down with our Chris Wilner to discuss his sterling start to 2024.
Tyler Ankrum, 2024, certainly a breath of fresh air for you and your career, currently leading the point standings in the Craftsman Truck Series for yet another week after Las Vegas. Just what has the start of this season been like for you as a driver and just, you know, your overall career? Because I would say this is quite a turnaround from 2023 and beyond.
Yeah, no, it's been a huge turnaround for the speed that we've had. Just right out of the box, we've hit on all cylinders. And as a team, we've grown exponentially. I don't think I've been with a team like this and grown as close as we have this and this fast. We work amazing together, me and Mark Hillman. He's been such an awesome leader, not only for myself, but for the team. But yeah, no, to be running like the way we are now, for the way I have run in the years past, it's a huge breath of fresh air, and it's a lot more fun running up front than I have in the past couple of years.
So what's been the key to that, I guess, sustained success early on? I mean, you mentioned the relationship with Mark Hillman, your crew chief, but I mean, to basically, besides Daytona, which wasn't bad, you know, you were fast all night long and just wound up just outside the top 10, but to have that sustained speed at every track, we go from drafting tracks to that traditional mile and a half at Las Vegas, and it seemed like you guys haven't lost steps. So what's been the key to that kind of sustained success you guys have had?
I know it's you know, cliche to say, because I feel like everyone says it. It's just hard work. You know, people don't give enough credit to the teams about how hard the first five races are of the year. You go to Daytona Super Speedway, Atlanta Intermediate Super Speedway, Vegas Intermediate. Now we're going to a short track, and then we're going to a road course, back to a mile and a half, back to a short track. The first five races of the year are, you're going to race every single truck you have in your stable, and that's, you're going to want to run for the rest of the year, unless you just race a truck and you absolutely dislike it. So the fact that the guys are able to work as hard as they are and still continue to bring the speed at all these different tracks, it just shows you how well we're working together. We're all on the same page, and we're all pulling the rope in the same direction. If you're not pulling the rope in the same direction, you know, the guy pulling it the other way, you know, he's your weakest link, and you're only as strong as your weakest link. And we have a lot of strong links in our team. So it's really, really impressive to see. And, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, it's hard work and leadership. And that leadership starts from the very top with Bill McAnally. He's probably the greatest owner I've worked with. He's super plugged in, and he's a great leader. He knows people. And that only trickles down. That makes crew chiefs better leaders. That makes drivers better leaders. That makes your interior guy a better leader. You know, name it. You know, every single position you have on the race team, it elevates everybody, and it floats all ships.
And it kind of lead me to my next question. You know, with Bill's investment now in the truck series and kind of beefing up the stable that they have and bringing you along, and it just seems like it was quite an undertaking, but at the same time, it's upped everybody else's game. So what is kind of the vibe in the MHR shop? I mean, you look at the speed not only you've had, but all your teammates really have had as well, and all been challenging for the win ever since the drop of the green in Daytona.
That's, and you know, you didn't necessarily say it, but it is a thought that, you know, everyone has, especially if you've already been at that organization for a year or two, and you've only been a two truck team or a one truck team, where there's going to be some growing pains, and you're going to have to, you know, hand out parts and, you know, and disperse everything evenly. And you're more than likely going to have a lack of performance for the first handful of races. And that just hasn't been the case. And I will say, you know, we've had that advantage of GMS going away. And so we were, as an organization, we were able to pick up a lot of the parts and pieces that were being sold off from that race team when they shut down. And so we really did get lucky that happened. If not, we probably would be going through some huge growing pains. But we were able to get some great equipment from an organization that was shutting down. And we were able to essentially plug and play, because these Chevrolet teams, they work really closely together. A lot of us have the same bodybuilders. And it was almost a seamless transition. All you did was you added 20 employees in the assembly room and build trucks, and you added about five or six more fabrication guys. And so that's really it. I mean, when you boil it down to the end of the day, and, you know, Mark was already there, Charles Dyke was already there with Christian, and so you added two more crew chiefs and a couple more guys that were more than likely already at GMS and part of a Chevy team. And so it really seems seamless. And, you know, right now in the race shop, everyone's working great together. All the teams are working super close. You know, the 19 team and what has been super influential on everyone. And luckily this year I was able to take the guys that were on the 35 last year. And I pretty much had a fully assembled team. My engineer was on the 9 truck last year, and they were in MHR's building. And this year they're out of that building. But I got a group of guys that already spent a couple years together, and that's huge for me, because they already have a rapport and they know how they want to work and how they want to build trucks. And so all I have to do is insert my way into that equation, and I can help solve problems.
Well, the good news is we just get right back at it. We go to a couple good racetracks for you here in the next couple of weeks for the Craftsman Truck Series. I know if you look at the next three, Bristol, Coda, Martinsville, Coda has been a super strong racetrack for you. But let's talk about now switching gears, kind of getting in this rhythm of mile and a half and super speedway racing to all of a sudden short track, road course, and short track. So where is your confidence going into to the next three here, starting with Bristol?
Speaking of giving away, I feel awesome about Bristol. I've given two races away at Bristol in 2020 and 21, and had good races since then as well. I feel amazing about Bristol considering how fast MHR was there last year, not just with the 19, also with the 35. But also, too, you know, our race this year is going to be 50 laps longer. And the NASCAR, I don't think they've confirmed it yet. The last time I heard, they weren't putting any PJ1 down. Now I'm hearing that they might be putting resin down. But even if they put that resin doesn't last as long as that PJ1 does. And with our race being 50 laps longer, there's a solid chance the top comes in and we'll actually be able to race really, really well. Bristol's become so difficult since the rules changes and we're all now on bump springs and are all on bump shafts and all these crazy new aerodynamical things that make us so much better. It's become harder to race at Bristol. Like I remember going to Bristol in 19 and 20 and it actually seemed like you could race better. But now we're just going around there so fast, it's become very, very difficult. And with our race being 50 laps longer, strategy will becoming more into play, when to pit, when not to pit. Because, you know, lately just kind of seems like, you know, you pit at the end of the first stage, especially last year, you pit at the end of the first, and you'll be able to go all the way to the end and you maintain your track position. Those guys that pit at the end of the second never find a way to get back. And so now we'll actually be able to have some differentiating strategies and not just all be on the same one. So it'll for sure be a crazy race. I'm super excited for it considering how fast I think we'll be, considering also what's correlating in the sim, the DIL. But no, I think we got some amazing racetracks coming up. The only weak one for me, in my opinion, is Martinsville. I've had some good races at Martinsville, just never been able to finish them. Martinsville is that wild card that no one really talks about, especially in the trucks where a lot can happen. And a lot does prove to happen every single year in the playoffs. So I think especially with Coda as well. Coda, I feel like we got another shot to win it.
And before we let you go, definitely want to touch on the fact that, you know, two of the next three are going to be repeat racetracks when we get, you know, later on this season, especially Martinsville, like you mentioned, being back in the playoffs. So how critical are the next 3 weeks just to get a notebook because you are going to be going back, you know, especially to Bristol, Martinsville here at the end of the year?
Oh, no, it's huge. And, you know, people don't realize, you know, those two tracks are completely different from spring to fall, especially Bristol. I mean, I just looked at the weather. It might be snowing up in Bristol on Monday.
That's true.
And it's going to be raining on Saturday and as well as on Sunday. And same thing with Martinsville. I wasn't driving yet, but I remember going down there with DGR in 2018 with, Benjamin. You're nodding. I know you know who I'm talking about.
Was it DGR?
Yes. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, but I remember we had to load them up. We had to cut practice short because it started snowing. And Martinsville in the spring has a ton of grip in the spring. In the fall, you know, it grips up a lot, but then it quickly goes away. It gets greasy, you start slipping and sliding. You know, same thing with Bristol. There's going to be a ton of grip. You can always go with different rings in the spring at Bristol versus the fall. Fall, you know, it's a lot hotter, a lot greasier. And so, you know, those two tracks, if you can have good races, well, you know, you're within at least 50 pounds of rear spring. So if you can only make one change from spring to fall, you have a really, really good set of races.
Okay, quickly, this is the first off weekend for the trucks here this season. So what do you do during an off week? Obviously, I know for you and the momentum you guys have had, I'm probably certain that you probably would rather be racing this weekend just to keep it going. But I know you mentioned getting a new suit kind of altered and fitted. So what goes on during an off week for Tyler Ankrum?
Well, for me, I spent a couple of days out with Ron Fellows up in Spring Mountain out in Pahrump, Nevada, which was a lot of fun trying to hone in on my road racing skills. But for me, it's the ultrasound and cattle today and tomorrow. So no sleep for me. We got to go to work on the weekends on the ranch.
That's right. That's your other full-time job as well as being a Craftsman driver is taking care of that ranch. Well, best of luck to you the rest of the season, Tyler. It's been fun to watch, been fun to be a part of, and looking forward to seeing you at Bristol.
Yes, of course. Thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Coming up, Concrete makes its return to the Bristol Spring Racing Weekend.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
We continue on this week's NASCAR Live. Following 3 seasons of dirt on Bristol in the spring, Concrete makes its return to the track this weekend. Our Kyle Ricci is here to share some of the driver's thoughts ahead of Bristol's return to Concrete this weekend.
We have reached week 5 of the 2024 NASCAR Cup Series season, and week 5 marks a return to a track that is a favorite of both fans and drivers alike, the Bristol Motor Speedway. In the first 4 weeks of the season, we've seen 4 different winners, with Christopher Bell becoming the 4th this past weekend at the Phoenix Raceway. With that many winners already, some are expecting to see just as much parity as we've seen in the first 2 years of the Gen 7 race car. Bell sees things differently, though, and thinks we are on the verge of seeing some multi-time winners.
I think everyone in the industry knew going into the season, having Daytona and Atlanta back-to-back, with the reconfiguration of Atlanta, that nobody knew, or they were going to be possibly 2 different unexpected winners. And Byron is definitely not an unexpected winner. So we're 2 races in, and it's, you know, I think we're seeing a trend of who's going to be up front. I don't think that we'll get there this year. And I think the races, you'll see the normal contenders start being up front more often.
Bell actually won this race last year, but it took place on the dirt surface that has been used at Bristol for the past 3 seasons. This weekend marks the return of the concrete for the spring race. That move has been widely praised by drivers, chief amongst them being past Bristol winner Chris Buescher.
I have nothing against dirt racing, and I will say in the maybe dozen dirt races I've done in real dirt cars, I've had an absolute blast. So I want to be clear about that, but man, I'm glad to get Bristol back on concrete and get that dirt out of there. So very much looking forward to that. Bristol's my favorite track, too, that we race at. So I'm a little biased just in that regard, but stoked about that. I'm going to sit here and tell you it's definitely the right move, and can't wait to get there.
It will be the first time racing on the concrete surface at Bristol for early season surprise Noah Gregson. And even though Noah has won at Bristol in the Xfinity Series, his confidence heading to Bristol isn't quite as high as you might expect.
I've never been on the concrete in Bristol in a cup car. It's not one of my best tracks. I know we have 2 wins there in Xfinity, and my confidence level probably going to Bristol is lower than most tracks, even though we've had success. It just always seems like it's a little different, especially with the spray being laid down and how it rubbers up. So I've been doing a lot of hard work to learn that track. Really, Kyle Larson was probably the turning point around there when we were in Xfinity. I spent all week talking to him leading up to the fall race there and just picking his brain on how to run the top lane and just figure out how to get around there.
Even though Gregson feels like he doesn't have all the answers to running well at Bristol, he still notes that heading into the last great Coliseum is always special.
It's just a special place, no matter my first time there in the K&N Series or even walking in the last time I was there, which was the dirt race. It has a different atmosphere. It has a different feel. It is a special place. There's no place really like it. And when people ask me, hey, where should we go if we haven't watched a race? Where should we go? I always tell them Talladega if you like to have a lot of fun, or Bristol if you really like a cool atmosphere and a cool racetrack that's really unique. So I always love going there and enjoying it.
Another driver who is trying to figure out the best way around Bristol is Ross Chastain. The Melon Man has only 1 top 10 finish at the track in the Cup Series, As for why he has struggled there, he's still in search for those answers.
Driving across the mountain and going into Bristol, Tennessee seems to, just when I get there, I have struggled a lot. I just haven't been able to make speed. My teammates are generally faster than me there, and I know that. I've studied Daniel a lot, looking through his stuff, and we've had completely equally built, same setup cars at Bristol, and he outran me. So as a teammate, happy for him, but want to beat him. And neither one of us ran great. Yeah, I have that those memories of the bad and the good, but why I can't make as much speed, don't know.
While Chastain hasn't found the secret to Bristol, Michael McDowell is getting close. The Arizona driver scored a career-best sixth-place finish at Bristol last fall. Even with his win at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway road course, McDowell calls that run at Bristol the highlight of his 2023 season.
The highlight for me was probably Bristol in the playoffs. Historically, short tracks have not been a strength of ours, and we made that a lot better. Got a top 10 at Richmond and, you know, a top 10 at Bristol as well, but we qualified in the top five. We raced in the top five for majority of those 500 laps. There wasn't a lot of craziness or attrition. We legitimately put ourselves in position to win at a short track.
McDowell says having that kind of top five speed in his race car is key for Front Row Motorsports taking the next step as an organization.
I feel like the next logical step for us is having more top five speed. Even if it's not every weekend, if you have 10 or 15 weekends that you have top five speed, you're going to win a race. Somewhere you're going to get it right, you're going to execute, get it all right, and you're going to win a race. And winning a race, there's such an emphasis on that in our series because it gets you into the playoffs and all the things it does. So for me, it's more about having those days of top five speed than it is having top 15 speed throughout the entire year, if that makes sense. I think they go together for sure, but I think just having more of that top five speed is what's going to allow us to contend for more wins.
So will McDowell or someone else become the fifth different winner in as many races in 2024? Or can Bell or former Bristol winner Kyle Larson become the first driver to return to victory lane this season? We'll find out as Bristol returns to concrete in Sunday's Food City 500.
Coming up, we'll relive the 1984 Valleydale 500.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
We're about to head for the exits on this week's NASCAR Live. This week, before we go, we thought we'd step into the MRN time machine and take you back to 1984. We flash back to the Valleydale 500 at Bristol.
First, we thought for a long time today it might be tire smoke, but Eli Gold, I think it's been there, whatever it is, has been there most of the day.
It really has, although it's not really intensified, except here in the last 10 or 12 laps, I would say, we're seeing a bit more, but the way Earnhardt's getting around the racetrack, going by Richard Petty just now, it doesn't seem to have inhibited his progress much today.
Just seven laps to go here at Bristol. Waltrip to try and nail down the victory. Terry Labonte, who sat on the front row and had a super run here today, holding on to the second spot. And Ron Bouchard. That car, that Race Hill Farms machine, has run real well this season, but they just haven't been able to finish races. This will be a good stroke for them to be able to hold together that third place finish. Dave Marcus in fourth. Tim Richmond rounding out the top five. They're each a lap down. Also, Ricky Rudd is one lap behind. Two laps down on a lap by himself is Richard Petty. Three laps back, Bill Elliott and Joe Ruttman. Four laps down is Neil Bonnett. Five laps down is Rusty Wallace. And 10 or more laps behind come Phil Parsons, Ronnie Thomas, and Doug Heveron. Then Jimmy Means, along with Trevor Boys, D.K. Ulrich, Clark Dwyer, Tommy Gale, J.D. McDuffie, then Buddy Arrington, then Bobby Allison in 23rd spot. Harry Gant is 24th, Kyle Petty and Jeff Bodine. And at the moment, Barney, Doug Heveron, who started last and right now is running 15th, would pick up that Chameleon Change Award for improving the most positions.
That's hard to do here at Bristol, but he's had a good run here. 4.96 on the board. There'll be four to go for the leader as he comes out of turn number four this time and works down to the line. Bobby Allison crosses the stripe. Here's the leader, Darrell Waltrip, in the Budweiser Chevrolet of Junior Johnson as Harold Kinder gives him the indication. There are now three laps to go when he comes back next time as Waltrip just takes it around the racetrack. And Eli, I'm sure you can see the big grin on Darrell's face from where you are.
I would venture to say right now he has a big smile smile on his face. You know, it's amazing. You just put all the names in the hat and you shake them up and it still comes out Waltrip. You've got to give him credit, though. He was in a position to take advantage of somebody else's problem, and that, of course, is part of racing. You have to go the total distance, and Waltrip right now passing us, heading into turn number three.
Waltrip heading back to the line. Terry Lamotti is about 5 seconds behind him. He is the second place car on the lead lap, and the fans come to their feet to cheer Waltrip on. White flag as he flashes down into turn number one. Let's follow him around on his victory lap.
He's behind Rusty Wallace and ahead of Ricky Rudd. Darrell Waltrip is. Race traffic not a factor. He's taking a cautious line into turn three.
The Junior Johnson streak remains intact as Darrell Waltrip comes off turn number four. A wave to the crowd as he takes the checkered flag and wins the Valleydale 500.
You can listen to that race in its entirety at MRN.com under shows and the MRN Classic Races tab. That's all the time we have for you for this week, folks. I'd like to thank Tyler Ankrum for stopping by. I'm Mike Bagley. For the rest of the MRN crew, we thank you for joining us as well. Don't forget, another download of NASCAR Live Wide Open coming up Thursday. We're back here next Tuesday night at 7 Eastern with another edition of NASCAR Live. Until then, so long, everybody.
NASCAR Live is a production of the Motor Racing Network with studios in Concord, North Carolina, and was brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. Today's broadcast was produced by Trey Downing, Pat Jaggers, and Julian Council. The executive producer for MRN is Ryan Horn. Remember to visit MRN.com for all of the latest news and information. NASCAR Live is produced under an exclusive license with NASCAR. Any use of the accounts and descriptions contained in this broadcast must be with the express written permission of NASCAR and the Motor Racing Network.